Hello and welcome to the Raptors Reaction Podcast for Sportsnet 590 The Fan. I'm your host, Wayne Liu, speaking to you after the Toronto Raptors get demolished by a score of 119-103 on the road against the Utah Jazz. So where do we start with this one? Well, first off, actually, I have to point out the Raptors did have some positive stretches. It was close at halftime. You know, Fred VanVleet and Gary Trent Jr., the starting backcourt there, give you 55 points. Ken Birch did his thing, got into foul trouble, which tends to happen when you're undersized and playing center. But he did his thing. There's no complaints there. But not a lot of positives outside of that. In fact, I struggle to find a single one outside of that. And it's not even a performance, really, where you're mad, because there's nothing to be mad about. Like, I think first off, defensively, the Raptors just didn't have it tonight. Really bad. I mean, it's not a good sign when you have to switch up your defensive coverage in the second quarter. I'm just saying that's not a good sign, right? So the Raptors' defensive coverage coming into the game was to aggressively trap against Conley, against Mitchell. Not so much against the other guys, but they don't really handle the ball in the starting lineup for the Jazz. And I guess that makes sense. You know, Mike Conley is, you know, all-star last year, and Mitchell, you know, is a lethal scorer. But in doing so, it created situations where the Jazz could easily pass out of the traps, whether that was the direct pass over the top of the two defenders trying to trap the ball into the middle for Rudy Gobert to dunk the ball or to kick it out or whatever, or even the swing pass to the side, which is generally speaking a better outcome because you can make easier rotations from that position. Even the swing passes were just leading up to wide open threes. And even though the Jazz scored 32 points in the first quarter, I felt like they could have scored 40 just based on the fact that they were missing wide open threes. And the Jazz, if for nothing else, have a lot of really good three-point shooters on this team. Now, granted, the Raptors, at least offensively, were able to keep pace. Two things. Number one, quite honestly, Utah didn't really play with any defensive intensity until the second half. First half, they just kind of chilled. And that's to not take anything away from the Raptors' performance offensively in the first half. But that's just what I'm telling you. It's just that they were chilling, okay? The Raptors' first possession of the game, they got three offensive rebounds on that same play. That kind of was the defensive effort the Jazz were giving. They were playing drop coverage. They were trying to keep everything sort of man-to-man. And they were kind of living with the results. And because the Jazz were playing drop coverage, the Raptors were able to attack that. And I think that's where the game plan for the Raptors actually worked to start the game, because the Raptors were able to go through Fred VanVleet playing with Ken Birch. And because Rudy Gobert was in a deep drop, so he was almost always waiting at the basket, wasn't coming up to the screen. If Fred got a good screen from Ken and Ken was able to, wipe out the defender on the ball, Fred would pull up for three and he did a good job of that. Or if the Jazz tried to chase over the top and actually forced Fred to go downhill, then Fred would get, you know, one or two steps inside the three-point arc and then throw the quick pocket pass to Ken Birch, who's really good at short rolling. And because Rudy's all the way back at the rim, Ken catching the ball, you know, one step inside the free throw line, he's able to go out for the quick floater, which he seems to be pretty good at. Both left hand and right hand was finishing those effectively. So those were the best sequences for the Raptors offensively. That was a great portion of their offense. Gary Trent Jr. was just lights out on pull-up jumpers. This is one of those games where obviously Gary's going to be aggressive. Obviously no OG because he hurt his hip and he's going to be out a while. Apparently hip pointers take like 3 weeks to heal, so we'll see. Okay, so you have Gary, who is, you know, the next man up, I guess, offensively for you. Okay, you want to see him do more offensively. No problem. Gary Trent is always willing to do more offensively. Pull-up jumpers, mid-range jumpers, three-point shots. He even had a great play where he drove downhill, had Gobert on him, gave him the ball fake, got Gobert to jump and bite because Gary has shot the ball every single time he's touched it up to this point. Then leans in, steps through, and puts a little scoop layup off the glass. Really, really nice move. And Gary was great tonight. 31 points. He was awesome. So that was largely what happened in the first half. I would say the Raptors did, after a really, really bad defensive showing, where clearly their traps are getting beat. The Jazz are a team that is full of shooters with a really good roller at all times, whether it's Gobert or even Whiteside coming off the bench. Whiteside can roll all the way to the basket, no problem, and finish. After giving up wide open dunks and wide open threes, the Raptors decided to change up the coverage. So they started to play more standard coverage, let's say. No more traps on the ball, and they were kind of dropping back a little bit more. And what this did was that it allowed the Jazz to play through more of their guards. So Mitchell got going a little bit more because he wasn't getting trapped and forced to get rid of the ball. Conley never really did start get going offensively, but it didn't really feel like a game where Conley really wanted to shoot, but he was a plus 33 in this game and just kept throwing these lobs to Rudy Gobert. Very smart player getting downhill. Kind of similar to what Fred and Ken Birch did in that two-man game. Conley and Gobert did a similar thing to the drop defense, where instead of with Kem, it was the push shot over the top. With Gobert, it was just catching a lob and dunking it. Just slightly different, but both ways to attack a drop defense, which usually has a big man covering 2-on-1. And it's one thing for Gobert to cover 2-on-1 because he's huge and he genuinely is an incredible defender. And the Raptors tonight were so shook about Rudy Gobert. I don't even know why they bothered to play. If you don't want to take a shot against their center, like, you shouldn't even play the basketball game, period. In fact, you shouldn't be paid for the basketball game. If you're too afraid to shoot against the team because they have one player out there, don't play. Don't get paid. It's okay. You don't have to. In any case, though, Gobert did a much better job of defending in the second half. I think, look, the Jazz just generally played more aggressively defensively in the second half. Their intensity, they were better into the ball, forced a few more turnovers, but generally speaking, were just better. I mean, they made some adjustments of their own. They started bringing Gobert a little bit higher so that it wasn't drop coverage. It was still drop, but it was kind of like he was dropping a lot less. It was a deep drop in the first half. Second half, he was actually, especially when Fred was handling the ball, he would come up to the level of the screen, and Fred had a hard time getting around him because that's generally speaking how you would beat those traps, or you would sort of throw the pass over the top. Gobert started coming a lot higher. What that did, though, was that it took away a lot of those gaps. So the little pocket pass to Ken Birch for him to get the floater off, I don't think that happened a single time in the second half, maybe once. But first half, Kem had 14, and he finished with 14. So, yeah, it didn't happen in the second half. Kem also got into foul trouble, so he only played 24 minutes. Realistically, Kem gave you the 24 solid minutes that you expect from him. He did his job tonight. There's nothing wrong with what Kem Birch did. The Raptors' offense, without that central pick-and-roll action that they were working really well between Fred and Kem, kind of just died on the vine. There was a lot of Gary Trent pull-ups, but aside from that, not much. And I think where the other thing that was really disappointing was, okay, so they take away this one aspect of the play. It's fine. To be fair, like, Fred played really well. Kem played really well. But it's not like we're talking about, Steve Nash, Amari Stoudemire pick and roll over here. We're not talking about some kind of combination that's going to consistently beat you every single time, no matter what you do to them. You could scheme against these guys, and that's fine. There's no fault to these guys. So you can scheme against them, and the Jazz did. What you need then is for other guys to be able to attack. And if Gobert's coming out higher to meet Fred, sometimes he would even switch onto Fred. Well, then other guys got to get down low and get in the post. Because I understand to some degree, yes, you need to use discretion when you're attacking the basket, when Gobert is there, even when Hassan Whiteside is there, because those guys can block your shot. And those guys did block the Raptors' shot quite often. The Jazz had 10 blocks tonight. The Raptors only 3. And 2 of those were Fred. Oh, my goodness, man. That's unbelievable. Yeah, I mean, Fred, it's the Fred block, which is a player's trying to go up for the shot, and Fred swipes down at the ball as they're going up. It's more a steal to me than it is a block. I think Fred would prefer them to be steals. I think he would prefer to have a 5-steal game instead of a 3 and a 2. But in regardless, okay, so Fred gives you 2 of the blocks. I understand players not wanting to attack Gobert or Whiteside, or at least sort of thinking twice, because those guys will block your shot. Having said that, though, the tentativeness in which Pascal attacked the basket tonight was really hard to watch. I would say it is like he's coming back from injuries. Yeah, sure. But we've also seen him play well offensively since then, right? What did he have? Like, yeah, 20 plus, yeah, like 7 assists, 10 rebounds against Detroit. I don't really remember being like, hey, this is, you know, you got to keep that number in perspective. He got hurt against Portland, 26-6, I think. I don't think I was like, oh man, Pascal, you know, he was hurt, you know, otherwise he would have done like, you know, more than that. But now today we're going to be like, well, 4 points for Pascal on 2 of 14 shooting. What is that? By the way, when you watch the game, when you actually watch the attempts, it was really bad. So seems like number one, Pascal didn't trust the three. Had no confidence in it. So I'm not surprised he shot 0 for 4. But no confidence in the three. Guys were just dropping back off of him, daring him to pull up. He wouldn't take it. Weird thing is, he'd been shooting the three pretty well coming into this game since the injury. So it's not an injury thing. He just decided he wasn't going to shoot the three tonight. Okay, it's fine. We know Pascal's an inconsistent shooter. But what was he going to do? Because are you still, you know, we know the bulk of what Pascal does is he pressures the basket, he pressures the paint, whether he scores for himself or he kicks it out, that's what he does. Where was that tonight? Like, he could not score in the paint whatsoever. In fact, he didn't even look to do it. There's two times in the first half when I knew the Raptors were really, really going to struggle tonight in the long run, because it's not like Fred's going to have 50 and Kemba's going to have like 30. Okay, that's how the Raptors would have needed to win this game. Where Pascal was driving downhill, saw that Gobert was there, you know, panicked, jumped in the air, and threw a pass that was not open because he just didn't want to take that shot, because he didn't want to challenge the shot blocker, and both times was stripped and, you know, it fell right into the hands of a Jazz player. And he had 4 turnovers tonight for 5 assists. I mean, they were almost, and I watched this game very closely, as I do with every game. I don't think there was a single play tonight in 31 minutes of play where Pascal drove hard, went to the basket, forced the help, and opened someone else. Actually, that's not true. There's one specific example where he attacked. I think this was at the end of a quarter, I think end of the first or something like that, maybe end of the second, where he dumped it off the Barnes at the dunker spot, Barnes finished. That's it. That was one. So my bad. That was that one time. This is how carefully I watched it, because it was just that one time. No other times did he do that effectively. And I'm talking about even at the end of the game, when the starters were in the game with like 5 minutes left, down 20, the Jazz had stopped playing hard. Okay, let's see if the starters can, you know, maybe steal your quick 10 points and maybe change the complexion of this game just a little bit. Pascal's in the post. He's against Rudy Gay. Rudy Gay, first game back from injury. Rudy Gay, not even just like a fresh Rudy Gay, you know, this is Rudy Gay. He is in his mid-30s, looks like he's in his mid-30s, coming off of the injury, and no slander to Rudy, by the way. He had 20 points tonight. I was literally screaming, not this guy, no, not this guy. I felt like it was 2012 Raptors all over again, based on the way they were playing. Against that version of Rudy Gay, who legitimately has the fresh off injury thing, because I don't think he's got his conditioning. Pascal tries to post him up and gets blocked. Yells A, gets his own rebound, goes back up, gets blocked by Rudy Gobert. And that's how he ends up with 2 of 14. I think those are his two last field goal attempts. It's kind of inconceivable that he was that bad offensively. Now, the thing is, it was also that bad off defensively. And the thing is, since coming back from injury, Pascal has had a lot of good offensive games. If you were expecting more than what Pascal did against the Pistons offensively, if you're expecting more than what Pascal did offensively against Portland, you're going to be disappointed a lot this season. I'm just saying that right now, right? Because he was giving you, like, again, in that first Detroit game, I think he had 27-10 and 7. I think against, you know, in Portland, he had 26-6. If you're not happy with that, and both times you shot, like, close to 50%, you're not going to be happy with Pascal this season. It was 25-12-7 on 64% shooting against the Pistons, and then it was 26-6 on 47% shooting against the Blazers. Okay, so offensively, there have not really been that many complaints. It's the defense, though, that has been a struggle. And tonight, it didn't even feel like the effort was there. I don't know if it was the altitude. I'm sure he's still catching his, you know, rhythm, conditioning-wise, coming back from the injury, okay, but one defensive rebound. I'm not even saying, you know, defensive rebounds are all that. Raptors weren't really hurt on the offensive glass like that. The Jazz aren't a team that really go to the glass. But one defensive rebound? And the rotations, when you see him, you know who I saw drive by him tonight? Royce O'Neal. And not to disparage anybody, Royce O'Neal had a great game tonight, by the way. 16 points, 4 rebounds, 3 assists. Pretty good, right? In terms of just strictly, in terms of the driving ability, Royce O'Neal would be like a Dodge Caravan, right? Like reliable for certain things. Really reliable for certain things. Nothing wrong with a Dodge Caravan. But like a 0 to 60, it just turned green and you're just like, you're just hitting the gas pedal. It's not like the Dodge Caravan's going to, you know, shoot out of the blocks. And Pascal's letting this Dodge Caravan, not even like a 2021 edition, like this is like a 2006 one that we're still round instead of the more jagged ones nowadays. That's who's driving right by him, arguably walking right by him. And this has been a thing that since he's come back, defensively, he's really struggled on that front. It was bad. It was bad tonight. The Raptors tried him at different positions. He played some 4, then he played some 5. Didn't really work. And I get it. Look, the Jazz are a tough cover. This is a team that moves the ball well. The Raptors tried different defenses. The Jazz still scored 119, shot 55% from the field, which, by the way, this is the third straight game the Raptors have allowed a team to shoot better than 54% from the field. You almost will never win in the NBA if you let a team shoot 55% from the field. But regardless, the defensive rotations weren't there. The shot contests at the rim weren't there. It was genuinely really, really bad from Pascal tonight. And as I've said in previous podcasts, there's two groups in terms of the Pascal thing. Okay, there's two groups. There's people who really try to defend Pascal, and then there is the people who go after Pascal after every game. Tonight, completely fair to go after everything in his game because none of it showed up tonight. None. Like, not a single thing. Even the 5 assists, I'm telling you, like, 2 of those were just, like, in the rhythm of the offense, you swing the ball. Not like you break down a defense. I'm not saying, like, every assist counts the same, but it's not the same. You know what I'm saying? Like, if I pass the ball to a wide-open player under the basket who's up ahead in the play because he's cherry-picking, it's not like I had an assist, right? So, but whatever. Okay, even the 5 assists weren't really products of him breaking down the defense outside that one play to Scotty. There's nothing to defend about Pascal in this performance. It was not there for him. And whether that's, I'm hoping that it was just due to conditioning, but to me, it looked like he was seeing ghosts at the rim with Rudy. And to a lesser extent, Scotty had the same thing. A lot of times today, Scotty pulled up from the elbow area. Nick before this game was like, okay, love to see my guys shoot more threes. Love to see Kem Burch shoot more threes. Scotty Barnes shoot more threes. So Kem shot 0 threes tonight, and Scotty Barnes 2 threes. First shot of the game, he was wide open for 3, shot it, missed it, not close. Second one, I think in the corner in the second half. Right after he missed that first 3 in the first quarter, he then has another sequence where he's wide open for 3 twice on the same play. First time, he passed it up, the Raptors missed, offensive rebound, goes to Scotty, he's wide open for 3 again, nobody's near him, turns it down, steps inside to the elbow for the pull-up jumper, makes that. Clearly, he's not comfortable shooting the threes right now in game. Okay. If he's hot, if he's in the rhythm, if he's in, you know, in the flow of the game, yeah, he'll take a 3. Early in the first quarter, yeah, he'll take a 3. But it reminds me of when JV was taking threes when he first started to do it in like 2015-ish. It was like that. Not a surprise. We know that, right? But a lot of mid-range jumpers for Scotty, which is fine. Like, clearly, it's a nice piece to have in his tool bag. But he was also afraid to go to the basket against Rudy Gobert. A lot of times where he was driving inside, then decided to kick it out, or just didn't drive at all. And I get that. Again, I get that. Okay, Rudy Gobert is a very, very good defender. Really good. Elite. Defensive player of the year. You know, like, I get it. But at the same time, you're just not going to function as an offense if nobody attacks the rim. Not a single person is willing to attack the rim. The only guy who attacked the rim tonight with like full gusto and force was Delano Banton. And I respect Delano for that. And here's why. So Delano Banton in the third quarter, he comes in late in the game, maybe he was in the fourth, I forget. He catches the ball. He goes right downhill and challenges Rudy Gobert at the rim. He goes in strong, no fear, nothing, takes off, fully ready. He's either going to dunk or he is going to land really hard after getting fouled. And that's exactly what happened. Gobert was in position, but he was late. Didn't really expect it, considering nobody else on the Raptors was willing to attack the rim. And as you would expect from a shot blocker, he did not give up the layup. A lot of contact. Knocked Banton. Prevented the basket. Refused to get dunked on. Banton flies into the stanchion on the basket. You know, must have been really painful, honestly. Must have been really painful. Gobert goes over to help him up. Ingles goes over to help him up. You know what that is? That's respect from two vets who know how much of a sacrifice that player just made. And Delano shakes it right off, goes to the free throw line, makes two free throws. I respect that because that rookie right there was willing to do something that some of the vets on this team weren't. He went hard at the basket and challenged Rudy Gobert. And you know what? Okay, you're probably not going to get Rudy Gobert to foul out, but at least you need to impact the paint, open up the shots so that the open threes can fall in sometimes for the Raptors. 10 of 38 from threes tonight for the Raptors. And this is a night where Gary Trent was knocking them down. Fred was knocking them down. But there was just no rhythm and flow to the Raptors' offense, especially in the second half. 17 points in the third quarter, 23 in the fourth quarter. Only 40 points overall in the second half after the Raptors scored 63 points in the first half. You know what happened? The Jazz started taking it seriously. They made one very, very simple. I'm not even trying to disparage the coach. Obviously, you know, Quinn Snyder's a good coach. But like a lot of people, after watching that first half, seeing what the Raptors did to beat the Jazz defensively, would make some of the adjustments that the Jazz ultimately made. And by doing so, it was shocking to see how effective that was offensively. The Raptors had nothing going on. And you know what? No OG on this team. You expect to see Scottie and Pascal step up. Scottie, I understand, he's a rookie. He's a rookie, right? We have such high expectations of him, but he's still a rookie, right? We really have to keep that in perspective. Don't blame him. But Pascal, 4 points. That's how we respond after OG goes down. Disappointing. And again, it's not even necessarily the specific output. It's not even about it's being a few steps late defensively. There was not the willingness to attack. And if you want to talk about being the guy, the responsibility falls with the guy, right? Who is responsible for this team when they're in a tough spot? And the Raptors are in a tough spot. They're on the road. Losing 1-5, now 1-6 in the last a few games here. Worst team in the league defensively in the stretch. OG goes down. Utah's still hurt. Precious is out. And what was the step up there from the guy? You know, and you know what? Let me just scratch an itch right here, okay, on the podcast. I'm just gonna go over to my Raptors media page, see who spoke for the Raptors after the game? Okay, Nick Nurse spoke. Yep, of course. Nick has to speak. Scotty spoke. Okay. Scotty spoke after a tough loss. Have you ever seen Pascal speak after a tough loss? Outside of Game 7 against the Celtics. That one, he was there. So, who's going to answer for this performance? And I'm not saying, like, you know, some crime to lose against the Jazz. I'm not saying that. But what does being the guy mean, other than you want it to be nice to you when you're doing well? Everyone's nice to you when you're doing well, period. But what about after games? What about after losses like this, where the other team just toys with you, doesn't even take you seriously in the first half, makes one small adjustment, and then crushes you? Where is who's speaking for the team after that? Again, maybe more guys are just changing, you know, like maybe it's just because it's a back-to-back and they're flying to Sacramento. You know, maybe more guys will speak. Who knows? Maybe Pascal will be one of those guys. I highly doubt it, though. I highly doubt it. What else was bad from this game? The bench. Just the bench is, just continues to be bad, which makes sense. You know, you lose OG. You put Kemba in the starting five. By the way, good move, right? Makes sense, totally. That means you have taken the one bench player that has performed and you moved them to the starting five. No issues with that, really, in the sense that it makes sense. Kemba has to start. Now the bench has nothing that you could really rely on. It's really bad tonight on the bench. 2 points from Chris Boucher, 107. Some of the shots he took were just, you know, not advisable. This is where I sympathize with Nick. I sympathize with any coach that has to depend on Chris. Not saying that in a bad way, just in like a realistic way. Because when he picks up the ball and tries to drive it all the way in, coast to coast, while Rudy Gobert is waiting right there. You know what, actually? You know what? Forget that, actually. On a night where the guys didn't challenge Rudy Gobert, Chris Boucher did multiple times and got blocked multiple times. Got blocked by Rudy Gay as well. But, you know, again, that's nothing Pascal didn't do. But, yeah, the shot selection wasn't really great from Chris Boucher. I thought in the second half did a better job defensively. First half, it was real porous. But to be honest, I got to give Chris a pass only because the Raptors' defense as a whole in the first half, pretty bad. Malachi Flynn, 22 minutes, finally gets an extended run. First half, thought he actually did okay. You know, this is a good matchup for them in the sense that the Jazz play some smaller guards. Conley's small. Clarkson is small. Trent Forrest is small. You know, like, there's a couple of matchups here from Malachi to play with. So, the Raptors even went to 2 point guard lineups. Some Fred, some Malachi. You know, there's some overlap, okay? For people who want to see more Malachi, here it was. Good chance here. Played hard, you know, got on the glass, you know, created a couple loose balls or whatever, but 2 of 9 shooting from the field without a single assist. That's tough. That's tough as a point guard. And this kind of falls back into what we saw from him last year as a rookie, where he would have these small chances off the bench. Today was a full chance. 22 minutes off the bench is a full chance. But he would have these sequences where you'll come off the bench, and it'd be a lot of dribbling. It'd be a lot of pull-up jumpers. Not a lot of getting to the rim. And not a lot of setting guys up. And this is where I feel like some of the conversations around Fred is so interesting to me. Because, like, you will hear people be like, Malachi Flynn, much more of a true point guard than Fred. And that's, like, one of the dead giveaways to people who really don't know Raptors basketball. Because what are you seeing? Like, what is clouding your vision and your mind? Like, what substances are involved in that sequence where you come to that such conclusions? Anyway, Malachi is a score first guard. Did not do a lot of scoring tonight. Defensively, his effort was there. Hard to fault him on the whole just because he doesn't play much at all. So he gets his first run here, shoots 2 of 9. I don't hate the shots that he took. Maybe there's one or two jumpers I'd avoid, but it felt like Gary Trent Jr. is playing point guard, is what Malachi kind of did tonight. And Gary Trent, by the way, no slander. He was 12 of 18. A lot of those were jumpers. He played great. I meant, like, it just wasn't a very efficient game from Malachi. Okay, Svi hardly involved. Nobody to really run the offense. And Svi's a guy who needs to be set up. He's a catch-and-shoot player. Not a lot of that tonight. And then Delano was in. You know, one assist, 17 minutes, barely had the ball. Not really sure what's going on. I guess if you're sharing the floor with Malachi, Malachi's more the point guard. So playing Delano off ball, there's just not a lot for him to do. But not a good performance from Delano. Although I do respect him for challenging Gobert and getting the 2 free throws. Very, very hard-earned free throws. But I respect that mindset and want to see more of it. And then Champagne played. Nick was talking about, OG's down. We might have next man up is Champagne. Well, I mean, to be fair, there's no more men with them, right? Bonga's in the G League. David Johnson's in the G League. Goran is on the bench. Doesn't play, okay? Probably could have used Goran tonight, but, you know, whatever. It's fine. I guess he doesn't play, okay? So then Utah's out, Achiuwa's out, OG's out, which means Champagne is literally the last available man. He comes in 8 minutes, got an offensive rebound, made a couple of plays on the basket. Looks solid. Looks like he has some pretty decent decision-making. I wouldn't mind seeing more of him. He's a little undersized to play forward, but he's also in position a lot of the time, so I actually don't hate it. And seeing him warm up and shoot and stuff like that, he does seem to at least be able to knock down a fair share of corner threes. Like, if you can bring him in as, like, a really, really, you know, like a PJ Tucker super light, I wouldn't hate it. And maybe he can do that for you. But, yeah, the options are thin right now. And this result here against the Jazz is not unexpected, really, but at the same time, just not a competitive game for the Raptors. And in terms of what Nick can adjust or what Nick can do better, I think first off for him, it's not a good sign for any coach that you come into the game with one defensive strategy in mind, and then in the second quarter, you abandon that and you go to another one. I'm not saying you don't make adjustments. Of course you make adjustments. There's nothing about, like, it's not about the ego here, right? If anything, I'm happy that Nick changed the defense, because clearly when you saw it, like, happen in the first 5 minutes of the first quarter, you're like, yeah, this is not going to work. It's not going to work. You know, yes, you were forcing turnovers, and the Jazz had 24 turnovers. A lot of those were turnovers where they walked, because the Raptors closed out hard on the perimeter, and they decided to, instead of shooting the jumper, decided to attack and pivot and go downhill, and in that pivot, they would step out of bounds or they move their feet. That stuff is good. That stuff is very good, like genuinely very good, and that's the point of the defense. That's the defense working. The thing is, the cost of some of those turnovers, and by the way, those are dead ball turnovers, a lot less valuable than live ball turnovers, okay? But there were clearly plenty of live ball turnovers here too. I'm not going to pretend like it wasn't. But the cost of that is some really wide open threes for some really good shooters. The Jazz shot 19 of 46 from three. You cannot give the Jazz 46 attempts from three. I'm sorry, but you just can't. You can't. They're too good of a three-point shooting team to do that. If anything, you were lucky they only shot 19 of 46 based on how open some of the shots were. You know, it was that, and of course it was just dunks, like straight-up dunks. Like Hassan Whiteside just dunking the ball over whoever was on him. You can't let him catch the ball deep in the paint, but you can't prevent him from catching the ball deep in the paint if you're trying to tag the roller with, like, Fred VanVleet. God bless Fred. Fred had a play where he wrestled the ball from Hassan under the basket. Looked great. Hassan pushed him out of bounds. You know, Fred gave him a hard look afterwards. You know, like, I respect that, man. I can never say anything bad about Fred VanVleet when he's kind of making plays like that. One of his two blocks on the night, by the way, Fred. Fred is the league leader at blocking shots when the ball is only 4 feet in the air, because those are steals, but people call it blocks. So I can never, you know, talk down to Fred. It's not his fault. But if you're tagging the roller is Hassan Whiteside, 280 pounds, and you're tagging the roller with a guard, even a forward, really. What's the phrase that Hassan says? Bundle up? It's a cold world? It's a cold world bundle up? Like, yeah, it's a cold world bundle up. Okay, you're not bundling Hassan Whiteside with Malachi Flynn bumping the roller. It's just not. But that's what happens when you send your center, your undersized center, but you send your center out to the three-point arc and try to, like, force the turnover right there. Listen, Mike Conley and Donovan Mitchell are veterans in this league, especially Mike Conley. He's old. He's played in this league a long time. You don't think he's seen a trap? You don't think a 35-year-old point guard's like, oh, he's trapping me? I'm going to make either the quick pass over the top, maybe split the defenders with a little pass in between, or at the minimum, I'm going to swing it to the wing. I'm not going to hold on to it too long. Yeah. They are. Like, they know what to do against that. So, wasn't a great defensive game plan from Nick. I didn't think it made sense. And to be honest, he might have abandoned it too late. Now, the thing is, once he abandoned that defensive game plan, the Jazz found other ways to beat you. And that's the thing. They're just a really good team. So, that's fine. But at least the other one made more sense in terms of, okay, you play some drop-back coverage. You don't trap the ball that hard so that people with making one or two simple passes will break your defense. But ultimately, you know, they beat you. That's fine, right? Part of that is also Kem got into foul trouble. He was really the stabilizing force of the Raptors on both ends. He only played 24 minutes tonight. It hurt. I get it. But I didn't think that was a great game plan. I didn't think that... I also just didn't think that the Raptors had much to give them offensively. And that's where I don't blame Nick. It's the offense on this team. First off, there's not that much offensive talent, right? There just isn't. They've been playing a lot better offensively recently. Tonight was not a good case of that. But to be honest, if you're one of your main guys, like Pascal, is not willing to attack the basket, I'm sorry. Like, that, you're just, that's the story of the game, period. And don't say he had 2 of 14. He had aggression in the game. Just go back and watch some of these attempts. Like, just go back to the... Don't even watch the attempts. Watch the ones he didn't attempt. It was bad. It's pretty bad. Like, he got the ball in the post against the switch. Fred had, you know, successfully coaxed Rudy Gobert into a switch. Then he gave the ball up. Right? That's an unselfish play. Because Fred could try to attack the mismatch, but he decided not to. Because the better mismatch is, okay, if you took the rim protector out of the paint, obviously Rudy has to stick with Fred considering he's such a good shooter. Then you get the ball into the post to Pascal. Okay, let's see what happens then. Please. Great. Great situation now. The rim protector's not there. The boogeyman's gone. Can you do something with the ball? Takes too long to make his move. Gets stripped. Like, it was that kind of night. So, it was... I don't know. The Raptors got to do better. I mean, they probably will against Sacramento. But I don't know. The Raptors are playing like the worst team. Well, that's not true. The Houston Rockets exist. The Raptors are playing like the second worst team in the NBA right now. That's just what it is. Defensively, they've been that bad. Their bench has been that bad. You know how badly the Raptors bench got outscored tonight? Their bench got outscored 57 to 20. 57 to 20. If anything, shout out to the Raptors starting unit for outscoring the Jazz's starting unit. Clearly, Gary and Fred shot the lights out. Kem did his thing. Pascal didn't even do anything. And the Raptors starters still outscore the Jazz. And this is without OG, who's giving you 20 a night. That's good. But the bench on this team, whether it's Chris Boucher coming in and just tossing up bricks and getting blocked at the basket and jumping at Rudy Gay 30 feet out so that Rudy Gay can then take one more dribble and shoot a more open, closer jumper. I don't understand what his decision-making is, but it's fine. Whether that's Malachi Flynn coming into the game as a point guard, shooting 9 jumpers and not taking, again, not creating a single assist, not going to the free throw line. Whether it's Fee not being able to do much of anything, really, and Delano... Actually, Delano does not deserve any slander, to be honest. But Delano had some weak passes. First play, he came into the game, tried to make a point-to-wing pass, reversing the ball to Fred, and he gets it picked off. And I don't know if the Jazz scored in transition, but they should have. Like, that's not good. Like, these guys just have to play better. But seriously, the Raptors are performing really poorly right now. You don't need me to tell you that. You can see that for yourself watching these games. So who knows? Hopefully they have enough to beat the Kings. Like, that is what a dark statement to say, that the Raptors have to hope that they have enough to beat the Sacramento Kings. But don't be surprised if the Sacramento Kings beat the Raptors. That's a team that has a lot of offensive firepower. Even though they're not performing well, that's a team that has some shooters. That's a team that plays fast. And if I come back on this podcast tomorrow and I tell you that the final score was like 130 to 121 and the Raptors lose again, do not be surprised. But at the same time, though, I still do expect the Raptors to beat the Jazz, because at some point this team has to turn it around. I think they need to play more cohesively defensively. The more the Raptors keep it simple, the more they're going to be able to perform. I really do believe that. But at the same time, they're also just down bad. They're just down bad. And, you know... It's tough. Really, the best thing, the best part about watching this broadcast until the very end was Matt Devlin and Alvin Williams giving the Raptor Show a shout out and then going on to plug Cover Story by Alex Wong. That was great to see. Obviously, we've had Matt, we've had Alvin on our show multiple times, and that clearly paid off. So, you know, once again, the marketing genius that is Alex Wong has struck. But no, seriously, that was super cool. That was very surreal. It's, I mean, I knew it was coming because, you know, I work in the same company, and obviously that's why I came, because we were in the same company. But at the same time, that's incredible to sort of see this show, which has gone through many iterations at different places, but really a real grassroots kind of thing, make it to this point where it's on the broadcast. That was really cool. But I mean, yeah, that's tough. Otherwise, the game was tough, though. Yeah, it was a bad one. Again, like, I was really saying, not this guy. No, not this guy against Rudy Gay, who, Rudy Gay, it looked like he was wearing like 5 t-shirts, you know, because he's just coming off injury. And he single-handedly scored the same number of points as the Raptors bench by himself in that frame in 18 minutes. So in terms of your 3 stars from this game, first star, I'm going to give it to Fred VanVleet. No, actually, no, I'm going to give it to Gary. Gary, some of the shot making was just incredible from him. The leaning mid-range jumper off the high screen, get inside, fade away a little bit, pull up. Man, he was naming a number of shots. The best play of the game tonight was the fake against Gobert. Lift him, step through, scoop layup. Honestly, I think the last guy who did that for the Raptors was probably DeMar, which was way back in like 2018. But that was one of DeMar's go-to moves. And Gary pulled that off. The mid-range jumper was looking like DeMar. The three-point shot, honestly, is looking like DeMar nowadays. DeMar, every time I watch him, he's hitting corner threes like there's no problem. Happy he finally got to that spot. But yeah, Gary, man, he was great. You know, and he was the primary defender on Donovan Mitchell. And Mitchell only had 20 points, 6 of 13 shooting, like, you can live with that. So Gary's going to get the first star for me. Second star is going to Fred VanVleet. 24 points, 4 rebounds, 3 assists, 2 blocks. Really should be 5 steals, but fine. 3 steals, 2 blocks. In 34 minutes, 7 of 17 from the field, 3 of 8 from 3, 7 of 8 from the free throw line. He just kept attacking. He went downhill. Obviously, the Raptors schemed for this specifically to target the drop coverage to get the Jazz out of drop to sort of force Gobert away from the basket. But the first half, Fred was torching them, had a stretch where he scored like 9 straight points, just like similar to that Portland game. And for small guards like Fred, I mean, unless you're Steph, right? Unless you're Steph, which nobody is Steph, let's be real. Nobody in the history of the NBA has been Steph. If you're a small guard like Fred, you're probably going to need to score in short bursts. Like we saw Kyle was not a consistent, like, you know, he'd end the game with like 25, but he gave you like 6 points per quarter and was able to get a shot most of the time. No, Kyle will give you points in bunches. And Fred has done that. He's given the Raptors these shots in the arm. And the second quarter was a shot in the arm. That was the only quarter where the Raptors won. They were 36 and 29 in that quarter. Fred was sensational in that stretch. That's where he had that 10-point stretch in a row. That's where he was setting up Ken Birch, like the two of them working that, you know, rescreening, giving the ball back to each other, and then getting the angle to get downhill, then making the center drop, then the pocket pass to Kem, then Kem with a short floater. Beautiful to watch. Beautiful basketball. But yeah, Fred was good. 24 points. You know, Fred did his job. That's for sure. And then Kem is your third star. 14 points in 24 minutes, 6 of 8 from the field. Got into foul trouble, which is going to happen because you're giving up a lot of size to some much bigger players. You're going to end up fouling them. Not even just like you're fouling because you're out of position or you're fouling because you're beat. You're fouling because the guy's just bigger than you and you need to somehow keep him from getting to these dangerous spots, which means a lot of pushing and shoving and bumping, and you're going to get some fouls for that. And so the only issue with Ken Birch is that there's not 2 of them. Like, if you could play 2 Ken Birches, maybe the Raptors would have had a chance tonight. But 24 minutes of Ken is all we got today, and I savored every one of those 24. That's dark, by the way. That's dark. If you look at the big grand scheme of things, that's dark. But regardless, in terms of your Gerald Henderson Award winner, that has to go to none other than Rudy Gay. 20 points in 18 minutes. 7 of 8 from the field, 5 of 6 from 3, 5 rebounds, 2 assists, a block, plus 14, was awesome. It's kind of unbelievable. I can't believe this is the same guy that once shot 11 of 37 in a double overtime loss to the Houston Rockets, or the Raptors finished with like 80 some odd points, and then banned stat sheets from the locker room, because it's 2 different guys. But you actually got to give him a lot of credit for the way he's reinvented his career. And no, if the Raptors had a Rudy Gay off the bench, I'd be thrilled. If you had Rudy Gay instead of Chris Boucher, yeah, I'd be very happy with that. But I don't think Utah's making that trade anytime soon. So, yeah, he torched the Raptors, though, man. He torched the Raptors. He got stops at the basket against Boucher. He got stops at the basket against Pascal. And then he got a ton of baskets of his own. So, good for Rudy. Hope he does something good for the Jazz. I mean, Rudy's a good player, man. He really is. He's really reinvented himself really well as an effective 3-and-D kind of four, sometimes even plays five, but generally plays four. Doesn't dunk anymore, but to be honest, you know, he's improved his jumper a lot. A lot of players will be thrilled to have a career like Rudy Gay. So good for him, man. Yeah, that does it for the podcast. Thanks everyone for listening. Once again, you can listen to the Raptors show every Monday to Friday from 2 to 3 p.m. on Sportsnet 590 The Fan with myself and Alex. That show is a lot more positive generally than the post-game shows, where, you know, of course, I can swing a little high, a little low. I mean, realistically, it really depends on how the Raptors play. It's not like I'm just here untethered from reality. Sometimes Raptors play well and I praise them. Sometimes they play poorly and I point out why they play poorly or who played poorly. But yeah, you can find the Raptors show Monday to Friday, 2 to 3 p.m. Obviously catch the Raptors Reaction Podcast after every game. And, of course, you can find all of that under the Raptors Show podcast feed, which has drawn a lot of strong support, and that's been great to see. Hopefully, you know, being on TV and stuff like that, that would help as well. But to be honest, like, it's been going really strong. It's because people continue to rate, review, subscribe, share the podcast. And as long as that keeps happening, we are going to keep getting these opportunities and keep talking to players and, you know, keep doing our jobs. And Alex can continue to buy, you know, new outfits, and I can continue to go to SVP and get groceries from No Frills. So thanks everyone for listening to the podcast, and I'll be back tomorrow when the Raptors hopefully bounce back against the Sacramento Kings. But based on the way the Raptors are playing defense, it's they're gonna have to play some defense to beat the Sacramento Kings. So yeah, let's check back in after tomorrow.